ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to MLS Cup Today. Yes, MLS Cup Today once again today. It's November 7th. We're getting ready for this Sunday where MLS Cup will be disputed between Seattle and Toronto. And to start the show today, James Grossi joins us, soccer writer. You can find his work on many, many different places. James, how are you today?
Well, not too bad. I had a little bit of an adventure this morning, trying to make my way up to the training ground, only to be foiled by public transit. But I rewarded myself for the effort with a nice little double chocolate scone, so I'm good to go, man.
Foiled by public transit, that's a very Toronto thing to be foiled by. But James, can I ask you a question? If we had this conversation on July 27th, if this was July 27th right now, and I was to tell you that you would be trying to get to the last media availability before TFC flew to the MLS Cup, would you have told me I was crazy?
You know, I'm generally sort of optimistic when it comes to all these sort of things. And so if you had asked me to put money on it, I definitely would have not done that. But if you had told me that it was a possibility, I would have definitely allowed that. You know, this was a team that after the way last year went, the way that they were going to respond to this season was going to be the overarching storyline. And when we saw them crash out of the Champions League way back in February, and the manner with which they did it, I think a lot of us had questions about what the future would hold for this club. You know, they were on a good 2 to 3 year run, and how much of that was having Sebastian Giovinco, and you see him leave, you see Victor Vasquez leave, and you kind of have to ask yourself, you know, is this run done? Is it time that you tear it down and you go in a different direction and you start a rebuild? And you know, we really didn't know what to make of this team, and they sort of muddled through the first couple of months of the season. They looked all right, and then they didn't look great, and then it took them forever to debut, and he sort of faded out a little bit, which is understandable for a guy that had been playing for some 16 months straight or something like that. And as soon as we got sort of towards the Gold Cup, the question was going to be who was going to come in and how quickly were they going to be able to become valuable contributors for this team. And I think you start with getting Omar Gonzalez in and him coming in after the Gold Cup, and then, you know, Gallardo comes in and Benazee comes in, and Vanny sort of is able to hone in on the style and the tactics that he always sort of wanted to move into with this group. And, you know, starting in August, we started to see a team that really believed in themselves and believed in the project that they were putting together. And I think that's been the overarching thing. It hasn't been pretty. There were a lot of draws in there. The win in New York against NYCFC was hardly the way that TFC would have mapped it out if they were going in there to play their way. And the same thing for the win in Atlanta. But they found a way to sort of gut it out and get the job done. And I've had a lot of different guys contributing to these results. And, you know, in a lot of ways, not the guys that we would have expected, with both Josie Altidore and Omar unavailable for all three playoff matches.
You're around this team more than almost anyone else in the world.
Yes, probably true.
It's absolutely true. I'm wondering whether you get a sort of a vibe off them that suggests that a big part of this run, the big part of this pride that is behind this run, it relates to a sort of a chip on their shoulder of them not being as respected as they feel they deserve. Because we've heard like Atlanta be anointed as the best team of all time, then LAFC, and then everyone else. No one talks about them, even though this is their third final in 4 years. Do you think there's a bit of a chip on their shoulder that they're using as motivation?
There is most definitely a chip on this team's shoulder. You know, I've talked to It's been a hectic week up at the training ground, so I probably haven't talked to quite as many people as I normally would have liked to. But, you know, 3-4 different guys, Justin Morrow, Ashton Morgan, Jonathan Osorio, they've all sort of more or less unprompted, you know, sort of said that people can talk outside. They don't have to believe on us outside. They can write us off, but we know who we are and we know what we're capable of. And You know, I think the question that prompted it with Justin Morrow in particular was just sort of like, you know, did you guys expect this? Are you surprised at all that you reached this point? And he was sort of like, people can talk outside, but we don't care about that. We believed in ourselves and we knew we were always capable of this, and we're ready and excited for Sunday. I think was the gist basically of what Justin told me when I spoke to him a couple of days ago. So yeah, there's definitely an element of, you know, I guess it's sort of easy to look at the way last year went and sort of wonder if whatever run, whatever edition of TFC we were watching that kind of, you know, reached the end of their shelf life. And as I said, this hasn't been exactly the way that they would have drawn it up, but these playoffs, and especially with this one-off knockout format that we're getting a sense of this year, it's not so much about who does it pretty, it's about who's left standing. And I think both TFC and Seattle are exemplars of that.
You mentioned the one-game playoffs and the new format of the 2019 MLS Cup playoffs. Do you think it played a role into Toronto's success? Do you think Toronto could have achieved the same run if it was the old format, which would mean a lot more games to get to the same point than right now, just because of injuries, just because of workload as well for the last 18 months of play for a lot of Toronto FC players? So when you look at this playoff format, did it benefit Toronto in your mind?
I think there's probably two ways of going about that one. I think you can make the argument that the fact that they did it on the road sort of means that, you know, if they had 90 minutes at home to establish themselves, that might have allowed them, you know, a little bit more comfort, a little bit more of a chance to go about things in their way and maybe not have to claw and scrap and grab and be so by the skin of their teeth when it comes to progressing through these matches. You know, New York was very much down to NYCFC mistakes that led to both of Toronto's goals. And, you know, in Atlanta, I think if you look at every statistic other than the scoreline, I think Atlanta United outplayed TFC on that day. And so if you give Toronto 90 minutes at home, does that series look different? Yes. Are they still capable of getting through it? Yes, definitely. I think the biggest difference would be if we had the old format. I don't know if we're having these same conversations about Josie and Omar. I think once you get those big long breaks and we're looking at a 6-8 week period as opposed to the 3 or 4 week period that this year's run has been, that plays a totally different element that adds more time and less of the sort of, it hasn't been quite a frantic playoff, but it's definitely been more compressed than we were used to in the past. So it's one of those ones where you have to play, and this is something that TFC said at the start of these playoffs, is you sort of have to take the route that's offered to you, and this is what they've had to do to get to this point.
Now, this game is very special for many reasons. It's a rubber match, the third fight in the trilogy, you could say. It's also a $6.5 million game for Michael Bradley. How do you think Michael Bradley feels going into not just an important game for the club, for soccer in Canada, I guess, to an extent, but also for your own benefits?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how to interpret this one. You know, we still haven't had it officially confirmed to us that this clause in his contract exists. And so, you know, until the club sort of announces that this is the case, I'm always a little bit wary of being too sure about anything in this. And we spoke to Michael yesterday and it didn't come up specifically, but I sort of get the sense that he's the kind of guy that, and this is very much what he said to us at the beginning of the year when he spoke to us about his contract and said it wasn't going to be a distraction and that he didn't want to talk about it for the whole rest of the season. And he's very much kept to that word with the occasional rare exception to that when it sort of became something that had to be talked about. And so the impression that I've gotten of Michael, having watched him over these last 6 years, and the general sense around the club is that he's a guy that comes in every day and treats every day the same. It doesn't matter if it's game day, it doesn't matter if it's off season, it doesn't matter what it is. The intention is to make himself as a player and to make the club as a team better every day. And that's sort of become a motto around that place. It's become something that Greg Vanney talks about. It's become very much the atmosphere that's been instilled there over the past couple of years is it doesn't matter what happened yesterday. The goal is to use this time to progress forward and be a better person, a better team, a better player coming out of it on the other side. And so, you know, Michael's been he's been a little smilier the last couple of days. I'm not sure that's a word, but you know, he's a guy that lives for this, and he's a guy that had a lot of faith in this team when a lot of other people didn't. And so, you know, whether it's the $6.5 million game or not, I think this is the culmination of a 6-year project that this guy put his faith into and invested his time into and invested a big chunk of his career into taking, you know, Greg Vanney made this point yesterday, into taking a team that Danny Kuberman's once called the worst team in the world and turning them into a team that's been to 3 of the last 4 MLS Cup finals. And, you know, that's a pretty impressive bet to make on yourself and on the team that you're joining.
So Michael wasn't wearing a t-shirt that said bald man gets paid at training.
No, but I wouldn't be surprised if that becomes a thing now that you've mentioned it.
You know, I've been waiting to get that one out for a while. All right. Let's talk about Greg Vanney. The Vanney out crowd has been silent for the last little while. How much credit, I asked Rudy this the other day, but I'll ask you as well. How much credit does Greg Vanney get for the last month of his career?
I don't know. It's always so hard to ascribe, you know, reasons for things between the coach and the players. You know, once the players go out on the field, the coach can prepare the guys, the coach can have a game plan, and then he sort of is on the sidelines watching it all play out in front of him. He doesn't get to actually affect the play. Now, be that as it may, you know, with your substitutions and with the tweaks that you make in the game, you can definitely help to shade things in your team's favor, but it's really the players that have to go out and get the job done. And so I'm always a little bit loath to put too much on a coach in a situation like this. Coaches don't win games. They don't lose games. They manage the team, and it's the team that goes out and does those things. But that said, you know, Greg Vanney's been pretty spot on in terms of more or less his approach from the start and then how he's reacted to things throughout the game. And I think the measure of a coach is always sort of how he prepares his players to get the job done when it matters most. And, you know, that I think, aside from maybe that opening 10, 15 minutes in Atlanta, you could say the TFC has had a game plan, and when they've needed to adapt to the circumstances, they've accomplished that. And, you know, I think that alone is as good a measure of a coach as you can sort of ask for.
Let's talk a little bit about, you caught me off guard with that a little bit, James, What's been the key here to this run in your mind? There's been a lot of unsung heroes that have existed, that have jumped up, that have surprised us. What has, in your mind, been the key to this run?
I think it's, and this is going to sound super cheesy, but I think it's just they believe in themselves. You know, this is a team that spent a lot of the season sort of reinventing themselves and rediscovering themselves. And, you know, you look at Nick DeLeon, you look at Richie Larea. I chatted with Patrick Mullins the other day, a guy who's been in this league for a long time and knows what it takes and what's different. And there's a I guess the best way that I could describe it is when TFC was at their best in 2017, there was this sort of look in their eye that it didn't matter what the day was going to bring. It didn't matter what the other team did. They were going to go out and they were going to get the job done, you know? And I think that has been what I've seen different in this group since that LAFC game, if I really want to point to it. I think everything going up to that point, you know, and Jonathan Osorio even said this when we talked to him the other day, I think the loss against Montreal in the Canadian Championship was a bit of a gut check for this group, and they were on a decent run and you know, they played well enough at home, but they couldn't get it done. And then they lost another trophy on a penalty kick. And that's been something that's haunted this team over the past 18 months, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is. And I think that was a point where they sort of had to decide who they wanted to be and what they wanted to be about. And I think the decision that they came to was that they weren't going to let the chance of penalty kicks be something that prevented them from getting to where they are. And now, having said that, of course, I've just doomed the MLS Cup final on Sunday about penalty kicks. But there has been this steely determination in them. And I think if you want to look, just look at the three matches that they played in this playoff. So DC, you know, you're on top of DC for most of the game, and then they score in that last minute to equalize it and send it to extra time. And that's the sort of thing that can cause a team, like a team can lose their head in that situation and their spirits can drop and then the game gets away from you. But instead of that, TFC just said, okay, kicked off the start of the first half of extra time or added time or whatever it's actually called. And scored four goals in 13 minutes, you know, and you go to New York and you know New York's going to be on top and you just wait it out and you keep them in front of you and you're patient and you make it such that they have to beat you or you are going to make them beat themselves. And you know, Pozuelo pouncing on that poor back header to score the first goal and then Richie, you know, surging into that box and drawing a bonehead play at a Matarita. Those are the sort of little moments that can be decisive in these games where the margins are so fine. And then in Atlanta, just like the end of the DC game, that kind of a start can rattle aside, and that's the thing that can totally get away from you. And you know, if Joseph Martinez scores that penalty kick, if Quinton Westberg doesn't make that save, is it 4-0 going into halftime and that game is over? But instead, you know, your keeper, another new guy, another new addition to this group, comes up with a massive save. A couple minutes later, Laurent Simon, a guy who's sort of been, you know, relegated to an afterthought after not having the greatest season, gets on the ball and picks out a lovely crossfield pass to Nicolas Benazet, one of the most peculiar guys on the team. And before you know it, it's 1-1 instead of 2-0, and TFC are right back in this game. And it wasn't pretty, and it wasn't the way that they wanted it to be, but it was what had to be done to get the job done. And that was just the embodiment of that look in their eye, that you're going to have to come out and beat us sort of attitude that TFC has. And if the other team doesn't have that, then, you know, TFC is going to make sure they're the ones left standing at the end.
You mentioned penalties. How likely is it that Toronto has to win this with penalties?
Well, the one thing I can say is that they have definitely been practicing penalties for the last 6 weeks or so. We gave Greg Vanney a little bit of stick towards the end of the season about whether they were going to make that a part of the regular routine. So the guys should all be well prepared for that as best you can. And I just asked him the other day if all five were not going to be Panenkas, and then he confirmed that would probably give him a heart attack. So that probably will not be the case. I don't know. When I look at these two teams, I see teams that are sort of mirror images of themselves. Seattle's run has been very similar to Toronto's in terms of they weren't always the favorite. They had to go on the road once. They were at home twice. They were playing against LAFC, you know, the team that everyone had crowned as being, you know, the second coming of football godery or whatever we want to call them. And sometimes in these games, it's not always the team that's best on paper that gets it done. And you have to find a way to navigate those 90 minutes and give yourself the best chance to win it. And so what I see in Seattle is a team that has that same sort of ability to come up big on the big days. And so when you put two of those teams together, two of those teams that are just as comfortable with the ball as they are without the ball, two of those teams that are just as comfortable putting their foot down and going at the other team as they are absorbing and waiting for their chances, I think it's going to be a fascinating game. And, you know, Seattle's at home. I think that adds a little bit of a wrinkle to our best of three series that we have going on right here. You know, how do they react to, you get the advantage of being able to stay in your own bed. You get the comforts of home, but you also have to do all of the hoopla that an MLS Cup week entails while feeling like things are normal for you. And that, there's always a little bit of dissonance associated with that, with the long hours of media work that you have to put in the upcoming week. And so it's going to be fascinating. And I think, you know, if we're going to bookend a best of three series that was won on penalty kicks in the first one, we're probably going to have to do it in the third one too on Prison League.
Yeah, that would be the Hollywood scenario for sure, to do it on the road in penalties with like Michael Bradley scoring the winning penalty. And that would be the Hollywood writer, the Hollywood writer scenario. But before we say goodbye for today, James, I know you don't like predictions. I'm not going to go there. We still got plenty of time for Dwayne and I to go to our predictions and trying to decipher what's going to happen. But tactically speaking, how do you think Toronto will come out on Sunday to beat Seattle? Greg Vanney has pulled out a few rabbits out of his hat out of nowhere in MLS Cup, tactically speaking. Do you think we're in for a surprise on Sunday?
Yeah, that is very much the question. You know, I've written a couple times this week about how in 2017, you know, TFC had played the whole season in that 3-5-2, the three center backs, the wing back system, and been a dominant side. And then you get to the final game of the year, and it's a 4-4-2 with a diamond, and it just absolutely overran Seattle for that whole match. And if it wasn't for Stephen Fry, we would have been looking at 4-0 before halftime. And so, you know, Vanney, what I would say about Vanney and his tactics, they're just as an aside, we were talking to him this week about tactics, and he was actually getting a little bit annoyed. Maybe it was we were putting too much stock in the tactical things, maybe our tactical knowledge isn't enough for a conversation with him, to be fair. But I would have a hard time knowing or foreseeing exactly what it is that he's thinking about doing. I know, you know, whether Josie is available or not, whether the Miracles chat the other day was a little bit of mind games or not. You know, I know Schmetzer said that they're going to prepare for Josie, which is probably the wise thing to do for any team. And I know that Vanney will have some sort of wrinkle up his sleeve. Whether it's as dramatic as a shift in formation like that, it remains to be seen. But he will have prepared this team to take advantage of Seattle's weaknesses and to accentuate TFC's strengths. And I think that's what every coach does for every game. They just tend to stand out a little bit more in these moments. And so the question is going to be, what has he seen in what Seattle has done, and how does he take the players that he has at his disposal and set them up? And this was something that Nick De Leon said about Greg Vanney, was that he puts his players in position to get the most out of their talents. And so what that means for TFC on the weekend, do we see them? I just saw somebody on Twitter a little while ago suggesting that, you know, maybe we see a back three with Omar Gonzalez in the middle there and fullbacks in Ben. Who knows? I will be eagerly awaiting the lineup to find out what this game's going to look like when that time comes.
James Grossi, thank you very much for your time today. Where can the listeners find your work?
I have been pumping it out for MLSsoccer.com this week, so that's the primary spot for things right now. But we'll have a couple of little pieces over at the TFC website as well. And as always, keep an eye on canfield.ca for all the good work that's going on over there. I know we're still sort of enjoying the glow of the first ever Canadian championship, the Canadian Premier League final championship finals 2019. I'm still working on what it is, the exact title of that thing is. but I think the off season is going to be fascinating. We've got the U Sports draft coming up. We're going to have a lot of roster movement as we've seen in the coming weeks. And I think next season is going to come faster than we think. And we'll be looking forward to the player awards later this month. So, not to mention Canada's playing the U.S. again in November, so I don't know when the soccer is going to stop, man. But it's a good way to spend your time.
Soccer never stops, James. So as us, we never stop. We'll talk to you soon, and until next time, enjoy your TFC coverage of Sunday's game, James. We'll be right back after this short break with more MLS Cup Today.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back for MLS Cup Today. It's our third special day here, MLS Cup week on Soccer Today. I'm Kevin Laramie with Dwayne Rollins. Look for more coverage than usual Saturday, Sunday, pregame show on Sunday here on Soccer Today and Saturday as well. We'll continue. We'll have conversations. You know, I feel kind of like the NFL Network in the week before the Super Bowl, Dwayne. I feel like you and I talk every morning. It really feels like the NFL Network before the Super Bowl, and I kind of dig it. I kind of like it. It's fun to reconvene every morning, look at what happened, look at the game, be able to think about one game for about 200 times more than that game will last. I've been thinking about Sunday for like hundreds of hours already.
I feel very privileged that I've had the opportunity to do this 3 out of 4 years as someone from Toronto. I honestly do. I was thinking that yesterday that the, not hype, but like just the attention that goes into this game, it's quite remarkable. It's quite fun, but it also enjoyed like last year when we were doing the same thing for Portland versus Atlanta. It's fun to have that opportunity to spend an entire week entirely focused on one game, which is why, Kevin, I like the idea that there's a championship game, and I would never want to lose this. I think MLS Cup is a fun time of year. It's a fun game. It's a game that I've enjoyed watching for more than. Well, I wrote an article on the sportspodcastingnetwork.com last night. My Sober Second Thoughts was about meeting a bunch of people in 2006 to watch the game. So I've been watching this for a long time.
Yep, exactly. And this what makes this game fascinating is all the time it takes to look at everything, to get ready, and the logistics of everything getting to Seattle, which is fun too, and Seattle deservedly getting MLS Cup. As you see on your screen right now, the Philip F. Entsch Trophy arrived in Seattle yesterday via ferry. It was a very beautiful sight to see, as you can see, thanks to MLS for the footage. It arrived in MLS, in Seattle for the MLS Cup trophy. There's a few press conferences going on today. Tonight, MLS Cup Works. Tomorrow, the State of the League of Don Garber, which we'll try to get you the audio and put it for our Patreon. So make sure you're a Patreon, patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork, where you'll get extended coverage even more than we already do. But now the game is on Sunday. There's a couple of news that I want to talk to you about, Dwayne, before we get to wrap the show for today. Apparently, according to Adrian Hanauer, one of the majority owners of the Seattle Sounders, there's a 10,000 people waiting list for MLS Cup tickets. That's crazy.
It is crazy, and they're probably not going to get it. I haven't checked StubHub lately to see what the tickets are going for, but it's great that you have this kind of desire in the home markets, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, that when MLS moved to the home market sort of format to allow for this kind of excitement to generate around the game, I think it was a brilliant move, because honestly, soccer without fans is just kind of a, 22 guys chasing a ball in a lot of ways. So you have to have that passion, and I'm glad Seattle does. And I know that the 3,000 tickets that the TFC was allocated are gone, and there's a lot of people that are spending a lot of money to get there, and they will add their own little part to this game. I'm sure that Seattle will sing to them that they can't hear them sing, even though, in a stadium of 69,000, why would you hear the 3,000 sing? It's silly, but nonetheless, it'll be a lot of fun. And I'm looking forward to see this. You asked me, I think, on Monday whether I was getting excited for this game, and at that time I said, I don't know, but no, I legitimately am looking forward to Sunday at 3 o'clock now, because 3:30 or whenever they kick off, because I... Yeah, it's going to be a fun game, and I'm enjoying this run up to it more than I think I have the other two, I should say.
Well, I think the fact that it's on the road helps. There seems to be less pressure. You're not exposed on a daily basis on your commute to work kind of thing to like the trophy, or this is Seattle's time to host this year, and it does feel a bit different just because it's Seattle's time to host, and I kind of feel like it's deserve too. When you sold out 70,000 tickets in like a day, and the most hottest ticket in town, MLS Cup final, it does create a buzz, and I think it does give Seattle a reward for their first 10 years of existence in the league as one of, well, one of the best team that ever existed. The best, maybe best decade, the best first decade of any franchises in MLS. Of course, at the beginning, you had like team like DC United who run the gauntlet a few times. But yeah, Seattle has to be applauded for their first decade of success in Major League Soccer. And it is, I think, a deserved host city. For sure. A couple of news surrounding MLS before we say goodbye today. Dwayne Dax McCarthy a couple days ago got traded to Nashville from Chicago. And also another independent move, Romney from LA traded to Nashville. And Nashville, the big onus in that trade is apparently there's an agreement that they're not going to draft anyone through the expansion draft from the Galaxy.
And they spent less allocation than Cincinnati did for Nick Hagelin in total for those two trades. So, look, they're already ahead of FC Cincinnati, which is truly obnoxious how badly they – oh, I don't mean to bash, but, like, what were they doing? It's like – it's if I let my cat run a Football Manager sort of simulation, like, what was happening? Anyway – It's funny, Nashville's coming in next year. It's like when the Dax McCarthy trade happened, I was like, oh yeah, Nashville's in next year. It doesn't seem real that they're in, because we're focused on Miami and all the teams that are coming after that, and oh yeah, Nashville as well. So that should be fun. No, look, it's a good move to get Dax McCarthy in, because you've got an MLS vet, and you and I have talked at nauseam about the need to have MLS vets, MLS lifers, MLS stars in your lineup to be successful. And that's, you know, it's a player that they can rely on that's going to get the job done.
Well, look at Atlanta. He's going to be for Nashville what Parkhurst was for Atlanta, a different position. You're going to say he's not a defender, Dax McCarthy, more a midfielder, defensive-minded midfielder with the capabilities to go a bit forward when the need is there. So for Nashville, it should be a great acquisition, leadership already, and Dax probably going to be the captain of Nashville and the centerpiece of the identity of the club for year one. That would make a lot of sense to me, which leaves Chicago without an identity for their relaunch next year. And I feel there's going to be a splash and probably a known name going to Chicago. Speaking of known name going out of where they are right now, Darlington Nagbe, according to sources, traded to Columbus. Darlington Nagbe taking his ball, going somewhere else in Major League Soccer. One of the most highly touted prospects over the last decade in Major League Soccer, going to a third different team in MLS.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because Nagbe's was a very key part, a sort of a subtle key part to those Atlanta teams. And for him to move to Columbus is a good get for the Crew, who need something, because it was a down year. And, you know, after the whole momentum of Save the Crew ended, it was, you know, kind of what is Columbus. And this is a good move for them to get a vet. I'm always partial to bringing in guys, as I just said a minute ago, that are established in this league that maybe aren't as sexy as signing someone from wherever in Europe. But in my mind, those are always good moves. If you bring a guy in, if you spend your allocation, you spend your money, you spend whatever asset you have to bring an established player into this league to your team, I think you're always going to benefit from that. And you know, I think it's a good move for Columbus. And I'm not too sure what this means for Atlanta. I don't know, but we'll see. And as I said, I think it's a good move for Columbus.
Yep, I think so too. And lastly, before we say goodbye, a non-MLS thing, just because to say, Alfonso Davies starting in the Champions League yesterday versus Bayern Munich with Bayern Munich versus Olympiacos. Davies, another start with the big team. I guess he's taking the opportunity giving to him, and he's actually getting into the good grace of the interim manager until we know who's actually going to take over.
Fourth straight game that he has played the full 90, so that's a positive development for those that want to see Alfonso thrive within the Bundesliga. And You know what? I've watched all four of those games, and what I like about it is how normal it looks to see him out there. He's not, jumping out of your screen by any means, but at the same time, he's not jumping out of your screen because he's, oh my God, who's that kid at the
Yeah.
back? No.
He's not jumping out of your screen a la Daniel Henry, if you know what I mean. No offense, Daniel. I still like you.
Daniel's a nice guy, but yeah, no, he looks like he belongs, and that's every time I see him play with those teams. There's a point that I watch him and go, those guys all just look at him as a teammate. Like what? Like he's normal. They like how did that happen? How did Canada get a player that just fits in at Bayern Munich? That's bizarre to me, but.
Yeah, it happened by luck. It happened despite the way we train players. And that's what I think we need to get out of this week with the MDS quote in Matt Pence article. But no, I totally agree.
No, well, absolutely, yeah. Alphonso Davies is a lock for sure. It's fluke, just like
Just like
Christine
Wayne
Sinclair
Gretzky.
was fluke.
Just like Wayne Gretzky was a fluke, right? So that's the equivalent I say in my mind.
Well,
Davies is Gretzky.
sure. We have 1 million hockey players. We only have 100,000 soccer players, so it's more of a fluke in this particular case. But we have them. And good for us, and we cheer him on, and he's fitting right in. Everyone was criticizing the fact that not everyone, a lot of people were criticizing the fact that he was staying at Bayern and not playing last year. When I watch him play now, when I see him out there, I think thank God he stayed there for the year because he is so much better than he was a year ago right now.
And I can only imagine how good he'll be next year. On that note, we'll say goodbye for today. Keep following our Twitter feed. If anything comes out, breaking news heading into Sunday in MLS Cup final day, we'll have it on our Twitter feed. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. with another edition of Soccer Today during MLS Cup week. So MLS Cup today. And Dwayne at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie, our Patreon, patreon.com/sports. Podcasting network where you can get more coverage. Canadian Soccer Show, the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast is available there, and you can get even more in the near future when you'll become a VIP. $2 tier right now will give you access to the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast. But as always, until tomorrow, for Dwayne, I'm Kevin. Have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.